The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
You're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. Most of the teams now back from their winter breaks, and we've got five pretty interesting fixtures to come this weekend. We'll also be taking a look forward to Valentine's night for the League of Ireland, with the new season kicking off. Dundalk hoping to win three in a row. They kick off their defence against Derry. Now, to have a look forward to all the games this weekend, I'm joined by Phil Egan and Enda Call. Gentlemen, good afternoon to you.
How are you doing, Will?
Has it been hard? Was last week difficult, only having a few Premier League games, and particularly with the City game been off as well, Enda?
Yeah, it was the first real tester of where things are at with this winter break, and I know what they're trying to do, but I just think the on a Saturday especially, the 12:30 gap between 12:30 and 5:30 is too much. Or 4:30, yeah, 5:30 on a Saturday and then 4:30 is normal on Sunday. I think that's too much. I'd rather see the second game pumped up to 3 o'clock.
Isn't it a wonderful reason for people to go and see Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers tomorrow, though?
Yeah, it's also not a good time to have that game.
Go on.
Well, the game's going to sell out anyway. First game of the season, always sells out. Most of both games are going to be sellouts anyway this year because they sold so many season tickets. So to have, I suppose there's one way of looking at it that it gets people excited for the first game in the league, but the first game in the league always brings a bit of excitement anyway. So I think they should have held their powder with that one.
Phil, what have you made of the winter break? I mean, some teams have had a curtail because of FA Cup replays anyway. It looks like it's here for the next couple of years. What have you made of the first year of this?
Last weekend threw up for me was an opportunity to watch other leagues, which was great because the Bundesliga, I watched the top of the table clash between Bayern Munich and Leipzig. It was a nil-all draw, but it was actually a really good game. The Leverkusen and Dortmund game, which was absolutely crazy.
Barcelona Betis was a decent game too.
Yeah, and then I watched the Milan derby, which was unbelievable as well. So it kind of gave an insight that there's a lot more to football than the Premier League. And it just shows that we are completely, like, the Premier League is so in our face that sometimes it is nice to take a little step back. And I enjoyed the opportunity to be able to watch those games. Now, people say, why don't you watch those games anyway? There's only so many hours in days, and there's talking about the little gap in the afternoon, that's when you get things done, like, you know?
Yeah.
Get the messages done and then put your feet up for the half five game.
Well, see, that's what I like about Saturdays is you can get all the stuff done out of the way and then just relax for football. But I suppose what plays into me not watching European football as much these days is the fact that it's not on... It's on TV, but it's on like a streaming service. So you can't really watch it the same way I used to sit up on a Saturday, get up at 12:30, watch football right through until 10 p.m. because it was on Sky afterwards.
Now it requires multiple subscriptions as well, yeah, which is expensive for the fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but in terms of the League of Ireland game, the Bows and Rovers game being put to tomorrow, I can understand why they did it. And I wonder as well, you think of how much is at stake and how, if you're a Bows fan or a Rovers fan, you don't want to lose that game. So at least Valentine's Day won't be ruined for Bows and Rovers fans. It'll be put on ice until tomorrow. It's going to be great. Like, it is great to have it back, and hopefully we get to see more football, domestic football on TV, and I know that something might be in the pipeline for that.
We can look forward to those a little bit later on. Of course, lots of talks about potentially more TV agreements, as Phil mentioned, potentially Virgin Media selling some League of Ireland games this season as well. Our football coverage here on Off the Ball, of course, is with thanks to Paddy Power. We will be discussing odds over the next few minutes on the Paddy Power Half Hour. And for more information on responsible gambling, check out dunlewy.net. And we'll kick it off with tonight's game, because I think this one's pretty interesting. It's a Greater Midlands derby in the Premier League between Wolves and Leicester. Leicester haven't had a good record against Wolves. Won one in their last five. Their form has dipped a little bit in the league, but despite that, if they win tonight, they can go up to second.
Yeah, this is a big one for both sides, because if Wolves win, they're putting real pressure on the likes of United, the likes of even Chelsea, that they can push late for a higher European spot than they're already in. You have to give them credit for what they've done this year in maintaining that that form to stay in a European battle, considering they're still in Europe as well. So it's you have to give Wolves credit where the credit is due there. This weekend, with Ndidi coming back for Leicester, if he's fully fit for them, if he plays the full 90, I fancy Leicester in this game, because he has been the missing link within that Leicester side in the last couple of games. Choudhury, he's a good player, got good potential, he's still young, but I don't think he has the same defensive discipline as Ndidi does. He doesn't get across the pitches as quick or as often as he does. So if he is fully fit, I fancy Leicester to just have a little bit too much for Wolves tonight.
Indeed, he does give them a different dimension, Phil, because you need a good enforcer when you play on the front foot as much as Leicester do.
Yeah, and Enda alluded to it there, that he just covers ground so quickly. Not quite in the same mould as N'Golo Kanté, who was part of their Premier League winning team, but he is not far off it, and they've clearly missed him. But I think when Leicester went on that run of winning 8 league games in a row, the one thing is, there were games that they probably would expect to win, and Arsenal were there, and they beat Arsenal at the King Power, and they would expect to beat Arsenal because Arsenal have a dreadful away record. They beat Everton as well. They needed a late goal to win that game. But then when the Christmas period kicked in, their confidence took a bit of a hit because they obviously lost to Manchester City, a game that they went ahead in, but then they got pummeled by Liverpool on the 26th of December, and Vardy was key to that run. He just couldn't stop scoring. So his goal, he's still top of the charts, but his goal scoring has slowed down a bit and Leicester are not winning as many games. The hope they have tonight is Wolves have just got this habit of conceding first, and Leicester are a good team in the counter-attack, as are Wolves. But if you're in Wolves' situation where you concede first, you can get out of jail so many times, which they did against Manchester City at Molineux. But you know, it'll catch up with you eventually. And what it'll catch up with them is this is their 42nd game of the season, and he's only used 20 players all season. They started their season in July. I'll be honest with you, I thought Wolves would be a team that might finish bottom half this season because of the busy
extra
schedule.
Load of games, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that he doesn't tend to rotate. But one thing that they've done very well this season is the evolution of Adama Traore, where he's just started winning games for them. He was always just this raw talent, but now he's actually producing. And when you see him in his pomp, he's pretty much unstoppable.
Well, especially now he's got that extra muscle on top of the speed as well. And when it comes to Wolves, we've spoken about them in big games a few times this year, and they seem to enjoy a team who will come and attack them at Molineux. We saw them beat Man City, we saw them push Liverpool all the way as well. Leicester are going to come with a template where they go to try and attack Wolves. It could well suit them on the counter tonight.
Yeah, and I think even if you look at the United games between Wolves and United, Wolves struggled to break down United because they were playing on the counter-attack. So it does suit them for a team like, say, Leicester to come and attack them. So, but also Leicester like to play on the counter-attack as well. So it's an interesting matchup between these two sides. On one level, you think Wolves, if they control possession, they might be able to break down this Leicester side. Whereas on the other side, if Wolves sit back and let Leicester take the game to them, then I think Leicester have too much power going forward. You see Harvey Barnes is starting to score a few goals now as well. So that, for me, they've got Vardy, Maddison, Tielemans, Ayoze Perez and Harvey Barnes now capable of scoring goals for them. So that's a very dangerous prospect up front. If Wolves let Leicester take the game to them, then they could struggle defensively for this.
Phil, given the last 7 games haven't been good for Leicester, it's probably going to be a pickup in form on the way now, but do you think they're actually going to end up in the top four at the end of the season?
I think so. If you're just looking at the league table there, they're on 49 points, so they've given themselves, they've a 10-point cushion. Mm. And if we talked about Leicester finishing in the top four at the start of the season, a lot of people felt the form they showed under Rodgers at the end of last season suggested they'd certainly be able to break into the top six. Top four mightn't have been as realistic, but
probably didn't predict Spurs and Arsenal to be where they are now.
No,
though.
Absolutely not. And if Rodgers gets them into the top four, that's a brilliant season. And I know because a lot of their points might have been accumulated in the first half of the season, it might seem a little bit disappointing, but the end game, if they're in the top four, they get Champions League football next season. So when clubs come looking for their best players, they can say, well, you know, we've got Champions League football here for you. They had to let Maguire go in the summer to Manchester United. James Maddison is good. They're going to be tested with that. But if they've got Champions League football, they can say to James Maddison, you know, give us another season. You're going to play European football. Some of the potential teams interested in Maddison mightn't actually have Champions League football.
And they probably have the money to keep these guys around with contracts as well. Enda, for tonight, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking a draw, a scored draw, but a draw nonetheless.
Okay, might suit both teams, keeps Wolves in
the
chase for the
Europa. Leicester are not keeping clean sheets anymore, 1-10. Soyuncu, who I had my doubts about before the start of the season, has had a very good season, but now is starting to look a little bit more uncomfortable in defence. And I wonder, is that just down to the fact that Ndidi isn't there, so the Leicester defence is just a little bit more exposed?
Yeah, one probably aspect that might swing in favour of Leicester is that Adama Traore dislocated his shoulder against United. He's going to play in this game, but you'd worry about his proper fitness, because I don't know if you've ever dislocated a shoulder, but it's not a pleasant experience. And after maybe a week and a half, I don't think that's going to be healed fully to the extent where he's going to be at his best.
You can only assume he's trained fairly minimally in that time as well.
Well, he doesn't do any weights in the gym, so that's...
Natural muscle. Okay, we might look forward then to Monday before we look at Saturday and Sunday's games, because this is a crucial game, Phil, coming up in the race for the top four. Chelsea have just kind of been limping along in recent times, but staying there. And Manchester United need a win to try and close that gap.
Yeah, and Chelsea have United on Monday. Then they have Spurs the following Saturday. Both games at Stamford Bridge, but they are two teams hunting them down. And the way it's going for Chelsea, they're still scoring goals. They create chances. Probably don't score enough goals for all the chances they create, but they concede goals as well. They're quite entertaining. And if they were to pick up 4 points from these next two games, I think they'll go on and finish top four. But what they can't do is they don't want to lose to United or to Spurs. But you think back to the first weekend of the season where they got thumped 4-0 by United, and it was a strange game in the fact that it didn't feel like a 4-0. Chelsea hit the post in that game, they had chances and they were actually quite good, and United just picked them apart on the break, and United looked to do the same. But the difference with United this time around is no Rashford.
Yeah,
Pogba played that day,
played a wonderful ball to Rashford for his goal as well.
Yeah, so it's I'd still favour Chelsea. With United, you're thinking, I think their best chance of Champions League is going to be the Europa League. Mm-hmm. Try and win it just like they did under Mourinho in 2016.
And who do you think are the biggest threat to Chelsea then for that last place in the top four?
On form, Sheffield United. Which sounds like an absolute crazy thing to say, but they are.
They're points total favour though.
They're not picking up as many injuries as United. As say Tottenham still have a couple of players to come through. I don't think Everton are going to be pushing for top four come the end of it, but if you're looking at it, you're thinking Sheffield United, Tottenham and Man United are going to be the three. They're going to be battling it out with Chelsea, and on form and just based on the way that they're picking up results here and there, you'd fancy Sheffield United ahead of Manchester United at the minute, which is a crazy thing, and it's an indictment of where the league is at. When I suppose you have to give Sheffield United a bit of credit as well. They've been fantastic this year, but it is an indictment of where the likes of United and Tottenham have gone this year and their form.
It underlines Phil's point though as well, doesn't it, that if Chelsea do have two positive results, it's a long way back for United or Spurs.
Well, that's it, but Chelsea's form hasn't been great this year, hasn't been great recently, so you're thinking that with the inexperienced side, it's going to be a battle for that last spot in the Champions League. So if Chelsea are to do it, they're going to have to solidify that defence. They're going to have to stop giving away stupid points like they did in the Newcastle game. And you can see Frank Lampard is trying to get that across. He was livid after that Newcastle game. And I think he said something along the lines of, I don't know how many times I have to come out and say, we have to stop giving away stupid results. So they're going to have to pick up those two results this week and next week against
Tottenham. Lost 8 games this season, which is a staggering amount. If you look at the teams around them, Sheffield United have lost 7. I think Sheffield United are going to run out of steam. And look, they're having an unbelievable season. They have the second best defence in the league. That's why they're so high up. I thought they would struggle this season because they won't score enough goals. They've only scored 28 goals. But if you're not conceding goals, you're not going to lose many games. But I couldn't see them finishing the top four. If they get European football, though,
it would be
that's unbelievable. They've never had European football.
They've been extremely reliant, though, Sheffield United, on goals from midfield. That's been the problem. If they got a good striker in the summer, they could be
quite
good.
Yeah, like they've
season.
Had flashes where Moussa has scored a few, McBurney has scored. It's here we are, mid-February, and their player of the season last season, David McGoldrick, is yet to score,
yeah,
which is pretty incredible.
What you don't want with Sheffield United is them maybe going ahead of where they should be in their progress over the last couple of years and ending up like Burnley, almost getting relegated the following year if they do get European football, because yeah, they're going to need to do some serious squad building if they do end up in a European spot at the end of the year.
Chelsea have obviously splashed the cash, not until this summer when they get Ziyech to actually come in, but does that show if they're willing to spend 45 million on a wide attacker that Frank Lampard maybe doesn't fancy Pulisic or Hudson-Odoi as much as we thought he might?
Yeah, well, the two players you mentioned, so Pulisic has had his moments. He got that hat-trick against Burnley, but he's been injured. Hudson-Odoi started the season injured, so he's only just coming back. So of the two, Hudson-Odoi looks like he's the more potential, to me anyway, but we just haven't seen enough of him. And Ziyech is 26, and the only thing that would concern me is, look, I know he was part of that brilliant Ajax team that got to the semi-finals last season.
You guys say he's been in the Eredivisie for too long.
Yeah, and why? Because all the best players that we see leave the Dutch league tend to leave a lot younger. Mm-hmm. So what? Look, he's 26. So he still hasn't hit his peak years, but it's a little bit different in terms of the Dutch league, that you tend to get players that are younger. That the exception with the Ajax team last season has been someone like Tadic.
Yeah.
But he had been there and he went back because he had finished up in the Premier League. So it shows that they obviously have a few things to work out in terms of what they want to do with their striker, because Tammy Abraham has scored a few goals, but it looks like it's an awful lot of pressure for him to be their main man, and the backup isn't great. Batshuayi is just a goal scorer, but you know, he doesn't really offer anything else in terms of build up and in terms of play. Giroud, it's quite clear Lampard doesn't want him there.
I'd say Giroud is devastated he didn't get a move, because he needs football ahead of the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can imagine in the summer they'll look at going after another striker. They're constantly being linked with Jadon Sancho, as is pretty
everybody.
Much every Premier League club that has a bit of money has been linked with Sancho. I don't know where he's going to end up, but there's been a little bit of a fall off from some of the younger players, which is only to be expected. That's what happens with younger players, they're inconsistent. When they're on song, they look great. Mason Mount at times at the start of the season looked brilliant, but you know, he's not getting his game all the time now. But look, Chelsea were always going to have moments in games this season where they can't find a winner, because that's what Hazard used to do.
Yeah,
they lost their best player.
And your impressions of United's big signing in January so far, Bruno Fernandes, then?
I think it's probably too early to say how he got on. I thought he was pretty decent in his first game. Played a little bit deeper than I would have expected him to play. I thought he would have been playing a little bit further up the pitch. You'd imagine he will be pushed into that position when Scott McTominay comes back, and it'll be the usual partnership of Fred McTominay in the centre defensive midfielder position. What's going to be interesting for this Chelsea game is whether Agallo is going to start, because the word is that he didn't go to Spain. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one that you'd worry about his fitness, how sharp he's going to look. Hasn't played in a couple of weeks, and you'd think that this game is going to suit him though, because he's a big, strong striker who's able to hold up the ball. And what was interesting when he signed from United is that he's been watching United constantly this season because he's a big fan of them. And he thinks himself that he's exactly what they need, because they need that link up between someone to hold up the ball for Martial and James to run off and use their pace in behind the defence. And if he's identifying that already, he already knows what his role is going to be once he goes into the starting lineup. So I think he'd be a good selection for Solskjaer this weekend, going up against the Chelsea defence, who haven't looked like they have the, I don't know what the word is for it, but they don't bring the game to strikers. They're a little bit standoffish. They're not aggressive enough for my liking. That'll come with time, but if you're sticking out a player like Agallo on, you'd think that he might be able to bully them a little bit.
United creating chances, Phil. It's one of our Paddy Power special odds. United to have fewer than four shots on target is 6-4. Now, it's been well documented in January they were struggling to create chances.
One goal.
Going to be a problem in Stamford Bridge again?
One goal. They've only scored in one of the five league games in 2020. The only thing is, if Willy Caballero's in goal, shoot on sight.
Yeah.
Because as I know Kepa's disappointed, but even a 6 out of 10 Kepa is better than Willy Caballero. I can't understand how this lad is still at a Premier League club. I was scratching my head when he was playing at the World Cup.
Yeah, and played very poorly at the World Cup as well.
He was brought in when Claudio Bravo wasn't working out before City signed Ederson, and here he is now. When I saw the teams against Leicester, I thought Kepa must be injured.
Yeah.
Because as bad as I said, if his form has dipped a little bit, I would always play Kepa ahead of Caballero.
But I presume Caballero was signed by Chelsea to be just a solid pro, a guy who'd be a backup, and there was never really intention for him to be a permanent
starter. You play League Cup and FA Cup games, but here he is and he could start. But there is a good chance both teams will score in this game. I would still lean towards Chelsea. As I said, if United are going to get Champions League next season, it might be Europa League. And I said, like when they won in 2016, it was 2017. I remember 2016 was Louis van Gaal's cup win.
FA Cup win, yeah.
Obviously, Mourinho won it in 2017, but that's a slog. Like, you start off in the last 32, you have to go through a hell of a lot of games to get to the final and win. But
and in all likelihood, if they have to play all the way to that final, it's going to distract from their league form.
Yeah, and it's the Thursday-Sunday thing where, you know, you're playing, probably at that stage as well, you're playing teams that mightn't have any game in between weekends, so
they don't have the depth as well they had in 2017 either.
No, and they were a lot more efficient because under Mourinho they didn't do a lot of running, but they had a target man.
Yeah.
Whereas now they're playing a little bit differently. If Ighalo, I can't imagine Ighalo is going to start, because I know what you mean about holding the play up, but if he's not sharp, if his touch is off, the ball is just not going to stick up there. You need somebody that's sharp. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't really know what to expect from United anymore, because they're so unpredictable. They could get a result here and you think, wow, that's big. They're back in the top four hunt, and then they go and lose the next weekend.
They very like going to Stamford Bridge, though. He's going Chelsea. Where are you going, Enda?
I'm going to go with a draw on this one again.
Right. Splinters from the fence, Enda.
I am sitting right on the fence.
Okay, as we mentioned, that's Paddy Power special odds. Man United to have fewer than four shots on target is 6-4. Taking a look forward then to the games tomorrow. This is a proper relegation six-pointer, Phil. Southampton against Burnley. Despite Southampton's upsurge in form, they're still not that far over the bottom three, and Burnley are having a very difficult campaign.
Yeah, but Burnley have hit form, and Southampton, both teams are on 31 points. Southampton, every time I watch them, I'm impressed, but they don't get enough points for their performances. And that's because they're not strong enough at the back. They concede goals. You think back to they conceded four goals against Liverpool in a game that they could have taken the lead in. They got knocked out of the cup by Spurs, a game they were 2-1 up in with just over 10 minutes to play, and they still lost. So that is something for them to build on. But I think from Southampton's point of view, it's just finish the season off, pick up enough points to avoid relegation, which I think they will do comfortably, and then they can go recruiting for central defenders, and they need a goalkeeper as well. And then it'll be a decent enough season for Hasenhüttl, who looked like a dead man walking when they got hammered 9-0 in October. But they've turned it around. In terms of Burnley, you know, you look at the win they got against Manchester United. You know, they should have beaten Arsenal. So, in fairness to Sean Dyche, you think they're getting sucked in, and he just sticks to the way that they play. And Jay Rodriguez has kind of come up with the goods, because Ashley Barnes was the man scoring the goals at the start of the season. He's injured. Jay Rodriguez comes up with the goals, scored that great goal at Old Trafford. And we know how they're going to play. Clash of styles. This is a game Burnley won 3-0 on the opening weekend, but I would be leaning towards Southampton, even with their poor home record.
It's interesting as well, and the 40 points is the kind of traditional tally you're meant to get to avoid relegation, but there's a possibility teams are going to stay up in the 30s this year.
Yeah, the general, apart from Liverpool, the general standard of the Premier League has been quite poor this year. If you lose a couple of games, you could be sitting in 10th, and then you lose three or four games, you're right back down into a relegation dogfight. So that's what these two teams are aiming for. I think they're probably safe enough. What they don't want is to go on a run of form that leads them, coming into the last couple of weeks, needing wins to stay up. They want to secure that safety, that 40-point mark, before, say, the next 4 or 5 weeks. They want to get 3 or 4 wins on the board and get themselves safe so that they can just start thinking about next year instead of worrying about whether they're going to have Premier League football next year. I think Sean Dyche has the experience to do so. He knows how to set up a team not to lose. Southampton are starting to pick up a bit for him. I think they have too much quality to go down, but if they start losing confidence again like they did at the start of the season, then they could be in danger of getting dragged into the fight. But I think they're safe enough.
The weird one is the right back situation, that they let Suarez go to Arsenal. James Ward-Prowse plays there, obviously picked up an injury. It's not as bad as... But they left themselves short on that.
Well, they brought in Kyle Walker-Peters on loan. He's not Kyle Walker, so...
No.
He's fine.
The additional Peters on top of that.
He will do, but he's not a long-term signing for Southampton in that position, I don't think.
Yeah.
Two bets that are kind of connected for this weekend. First of all, Shane Long to score, enhanced to 21-10 for this weekend. He's been more of a creator than a scorer, but he did get in the score sheet a few weeks ago, Phil.
Yeah, he scored, and he scored against Tottenham in the Cup, took it well, but he's got that buzz about him again, where, you know, with Shane Long, he's always going to have that energy, but there's more purpose in it now, and it bodes well for Mick McCarthy and the Ireland team, because we don't score goals, and people say, well, Shane Long doesn't score many goals either, but I would much rather have Shane Long in the Ireland team in Slovakia than not have him, because he just sets the tone even from the first minute, where you think back to last season, he scored that goal against Watford after how many seconds? It was one of the quickest goals.
Very early in the game, yeah.
Because that's the way he plays. But the more goals he scores, the more his confidence goes through the roof, and it bodes well for us. But it's, I think with Shane Long, he's obviously trying to get his... There is talk he's getting his new contract, which would be great. I've always thought...
Hasenhüttl seems to really like him.
Yeah, and I always thought Shane Long is perfect for a manager that likes to press. And there was a few years ago he was linked with Liverpool when Klopp was there, and people kind of thought, it's a bit, is he really a Liverpool player? I could see why the link was made, because, you know, he's 100 miles an hour, and that's what certain managers want. But yeah, it's great to see him back playing. I just hope he can stay fit and add a few more goals, and then, you know, Mick McCarthy puts them into the team for the Slovakia again.
Well, there was an interview, I think it was on The Athletic, and I think it was with Felipe Mangala, the former Man City defender. I think he mentioned Shane Long in it, about being one of the most difficult strikers to play up against, because he's just such a hassle in the air. He likes to get stuck into you. He's putting you under serious pressure with his pace. He might not be a goal threat, but he does offer something, and I would have been quite critical of Shane Long a couple of months ago when Ireland were in the European qualifiers, and people were asking why he wasn't in the team, because he wasn't putting in these performances and he wasn't scoring goals. But now I know he's not scoring goals, but he is putting in the performances to warrant him getting a place in this Irish side. So I think he should start against Slovakia.
Yeah, and Danny Ings is the man scoring the goals. Yeah. So if Southampton are scoring goals and Shane Long is helping them do that, even if he's not finding the net himself, his all-round play. And I think the Southampton fans, they've gone through a few phases of they like him, they
understandably frustrated he's not scoring,
and then... But I think one thing that they love about him is he will always give 100%. And I know people say, you know, that should be a given, but it's not always a given with some players.
Honesty of effort, as they say. Shane Long, 21-10 to score this weekend. An Irish player to score this weekend in the Premier League on our What Odds Paddy is 6-4. Now, realistically, Shane Long might be your best chance. You've got Matt Doherty at Wolves this weekend, potentially Adam Ida being involved with Norwich against Liverpool, which is the game we're going to look at in the moment. And there won't be much Irish interest outside of that this weekend.
Jeff Hendrick
possibly for Burnley. Yeah. In terms of Norwich Liverpool, this seems struggling Norwich against on fire Liverpool. Only one result here, away win.
Yeah, you would imagine so, and you think that Liverpool have Milner and Mane back, so the winter break served them well. Liverpool got the most out of it in terms of being able to give the first team squad the full time off, and the under-19s team did the business against Shrewsbury in the FA Cup. So the only thing that might work in Norwich's favour is that Atletico Madrid game, first leg in Madrid on Tuesday. So what does Klopp do with his team? He can pick the same, pretty much the same back four. He might rest one of his fullbacks, but it was interesting. Andy Robertson has done an interview where he effectively said, he rarely misses a game. And he said, yeah, I've been playing through the pain barrier, so the time off was good.
Yeah.
Because his form, his high standards, he was just a little bit off that, I thought, in the last few months, but still the best left back in the Premier League, but his standards are so high. So I wonder, will Klopp maybe, if Milner is ready, will he put him in for one of the fullbacks?
Possibly a temptation, yeah.
Could play right back or left back. And then does he hold Mane back for the Madrid game, or does he give him a bit of game time just to get his sharpness back?
Possibly off the bench, just give him a few minutes and just get his match rhythm back.
Look, for Liverpool, you know, it's one of these that once Van Dijk is playing and you've got Alisson there, it's hard to imagine Norwich scoring too many goals, and Liverpool will have enough firepower. And then they just tick it off, and then it's down to five wins, and they're just counting down the days.
You were the same on this one, Enda?
Yeah, it's a fairly easy win for Liverpool. The only scarier thing that Norwich could think about is if Luis Suarez was on the pitch against them.
Yeah, fair point. Maybe Mo Salah can have a big game like Suarez had many times against Norwich. Aston Villa Spurs, Phil. Aston Villa scrapping for their lives now again. Spurs obviously still with that kind of outside hope of the top four, but they're going to have to finish the season pretty well.
Yeah, and they've got the second worst away record in the Premier League this season. So this is actually might not be a bad game for Villa, where people probably don't give them much of a chance. But I think one thing we've seen with Villa, and they did take the lead at White Hart Lane in the opening game, or the opening weekend of the season. If Jack Grealish is on song, which, you know, he's had a brilliant season, given that Villa haven't been great, but Grealish has always performed most games, so I think Villa definitely have a chance in this one. And Spurs they're picking up results, and they beat Manchester City.
Patchy results, Phil.
They are.
That's
like
the problem.
Yeah, and you know, some people describe the win over Manchester City as a Mourinho masterclass. It wasn't. City should have had that game
dead by half time.
Yeah, and okay, you know, you can argue that's the way football goes, but that stuff catches up with you. And as I said, they're picking up the wins, but I just wonder how long they can keep doing that. And I kind of wrote them off as a top four finisher weeks ago, and they've kind of crept back into it. So they have to win this game, and then obviously they go to Stamford Bridge next weekend, and then, you know, we'll see where they are after that. But the only thing is Ben Davis is coming back. I wonder, would Mourinho maybe be tempted to take Aurier out of the team and put Tanganga right as back. The right back and play Ben Davis as the left back?
Well, Paddy Power sends his odds every week, and one of the ones that's quite interesting is effectively efficiency for this weekend. Tottenham to have fewer than five shots end on target, but to win by two goals.
Yeah. They
4-1.
They had two shots on target against City, two goals.
Yep.
So that's the way they're winning these games. I wouldn't rule it past that. So that's what, if they concede, they basically have to score three goals with three shots. So I'm not sure how likely that is, but
no pressure, Son Heung-min and the other Spurs attackers for this weekend. How do you see it going, Enda?
I fancy Tottenham in this. They're starting to pick up results at the right time. Don't think Aston Villa have the defensive prowess to stop the Tottenham players at the minute. I know that Harry Kane's out injured, but just with the couple of players coming through now, they're starting to get a bit of form, starting to hit those sort of markers that Mourinho would be looking for at this time of the season. And if Mourinho managed to get Champions League with Tottenham this year, that's a real foundation for him to start building with his side. So he'll be putting real pressure on these players to perform.
Phil?
I actually think Villa can get something from this game. I think if they got a draw, and you know, I don't think you can underestimate what that win over Leicester in the League Cup semi-final will have done for Villa. That's something to look forward to.
It's a buzz for Villa fans. Yeah. First time in a decade they're going to a final. It's huge.
And everyone absolutely mad to make sure they're in that starting 11. So it's a nice problem for Dean Smith to have, where he's going to have a think about what team to pick and lads trying to put their hand up for selection for that final. So I think, as I said, home game for Villa. And, you know, if they just have to keep Spurs out for as long as they can, and then I think, as I said, with Grealish in there, they have a chance. Set pieces as well could be key for them, because I haven't been overly convinced by Hugo Lloris on his return.
Well, Andy, you predicted two draws early on in our preview. On one of our What Odds, Paddy, more than three draws on this Premier League weekend. 40-1 looks pretty tasty, because there's a lot of potential draws there. You mentioned Chelsea United, potentially Wolves Leicester tonight. Arsenal Newcastle could easily be a draw on Sunday as well.
Yeah, it's a league full of draws this year. It's not very exciting. I don't like the Premier League. When it's too competitive amongst the middle tiered sides, then it just becomes a bit boring.
Okay, well, obviously then you're going to be hoping that someone blows someone away between Arsenal and Newcastle. Phil, what do you think is going to happen? This is a game at the start of the season I would not have had down as a mid-table battle.
It's amazing that the two of them are on the same amount of points. Yeah. And I would have imagined that having this conversation today, we'd be talking about Newcastle with a different manager, because Steve Bruce was in a lot of people's picks for who's going to be the first manager to lose.
Some of the Newcastle fans wanted them gone before the season started.
And then they lose 1-0 on the opening weekend against Arsenal. And look at Arsenal since. Emery's obviously gone. Freddie Ljungberg was a caretaker manager and didn't go very well. Arteta's come in, there's been an improvement, there's a bit more steel about them, but they're not winning games. Mm. They are the draw specialists. One win in the league, and that was against Manchester United. And there's encouraging signs. And the only thing I can think is Arteta has now had a prolonged period on the training ground with them, that I'm expecting to see an improvement. You know, you can go on the fly with train, play matches and learn on the fly. And this is now a chance for him to actually have a look at the players, tell them exactly what you want and work on the tactics, and then try and execute it now this weekend. And if that all goes according to plan, they should have enough quality to beat Newcastle.
Just before we leave, I'm just asking about some of the League of Ireland games. It's Valentine's night. Dundalk, I would expect, end a kick-off with a win against Derry tonight.
I'm not so sure. I fancy Derry to do something in the league this year, be that push for the third place European spot or even challenge for a second place. They've added to their team. I know they lost their captain Barry McNamee to Finn Harps, but they've brought in Conor McCarthy. They've also managed to keep a hold of Parkhouse, which is a big boost for them as well. So, and Dundalk did start quite slowly last year, so I expect a draw up in the Oriel Park.
Okay, Phil, what are you thinking about Shells and Cork? Cork, obviously, a lot of talk about a potential takeover now at this stage from Preston, whatever with the sell-on clauses being sold. Yeah. Shelburne, I think, have recruited really well in this off-season. Carl Shepherd going back against his former side tonight.
Yeah, and you often see it with newly promoted sides as well, where the first couple of games, the buzz of being back in the big time. And Cork had a dreadful season last season. You'd imagine it can't be any worse for them. But I think this would be a nice game now for Shelburne, just to kind of show everyone, yeah, like we're here, we're back in the top flight. And if they go to Turner's Cross and get a win, that's some statement. But I'm not sure if they can get the win, but I wouldn't be surprised if they picked up a point at least.
If Shells do get a point, it'll soften the prospect of Dundalk on weekend too. You're a North West correspondent effectively, and so I'll ask you about the derby. Finn Harps and Sligo tonight. Raf Quintero still playing against his former side?
Yeah, and Finn Harps have added brilliantly this year. I'm really surprised by how many signings they've been able to bring in. Barry McNamee is obviously a massive signing for them. To be able to bring in the Derry City captain is something that Finn Harps wouldn't have imagined of a couple of years back, and he's going to add a serious skill set into the centre midfield. They've also brought in Adrian Delap, who's a youngster from Derry City. I think he's going to be brilliant this year. He was unlucky not to get more game time last year for Derry. Some people might have seen him in the cup, but he's a really good prospect as well. So the thing about this game is, though, it's the first game of the season. We're still in February. It was snowing last week in Donegal. Yeah. The pitch is going to be horrendous, and it's going to be probably windy and wet in Donegal tonight as well. So expect a very, very dull, boring hoofball game.
Okay, I spoke to Stephen O'Donnell last week at the League of Ireland launch, and I really genuinely think that Robbie Benson going to Pats might be one of the best signings of the year. He's going to be huge for them. They take on Waterford. I think a lot of Waterford fans got nervy this morning when a tweet went out from Waterford saying that Lee Power was going to make an announcement at 9. It was about an arrangement as opposed to anything else happening. I think Pats have a good chance of getting off to a winning start here, Phil.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Stephen O'Donnell obviously took over during the season last season, but you know, this is almost like a clean slate. Often it's not a bad thing where a manager gets a little bit of time to have a look at what he's got to work with, so when he's making his plans for the start of the new season, he knows exactly what to get. But yeah, Robbie Benson is a player obviously Stephen O'Donnell knows so well. He would have played alongside him in midfield with Dundalk. So yeah, they've recruited certain players over the last few seasons where you think, yeah, they could make a huge difference, and it hasn't quite worked out. So we don't really know what to expect from St. Pat's, but what we do know is that Stephen O'Donnell will have a certain standard. He'll have a certain style of play that he wants to. You know, he was a ball player, and that's the way he'll want his teams to play. And you know, if they can start with a win, what they need to do is they have to make Richmond Park that fortress and make it a tough place for teams to go.
Ask you both about the big game of the weekend then. Bows against Rovers, their rivalry reignited not on Valentine's night, but on the day after Valentine's Day, tomorrow afternoon at Dalyman Park. Shamrock Rovers ended their horrible run of form against Bohemians. They lifted a cup for the first time in 30 years at the end of last season as well. And maybe that kind of frustration factor is gone for Rovers against Bows now?
Yeah, it was a real hoodoo for them, and their discipline has been poor against Bows, and that's what it came to in the end when they finally got over the line against Bows, was they were able to keep their heads, not getting silly red cards, not giving away silly penalties. Before that, that's exactly what was killing them in these games. Again, it's the start of the season. You'd expect players to be a little bit rusty. It's still going to be a cracker. The atmosphere is going to be brilliant, but I don't think the quality is going to be there that we're going to see in these games later on in the season. So I'd be a conservative draw in this game as well. I'm picking draws all over the place.
To be the draw wasn't available as part of this. Yeah, where are you going, Phil?
I think Rovers, because I think it was a massive thing for them to beat Dundalk in the cup final, but to beat Bows in the semi-final. And just takes a little bit of pressure off them where they got the bit of silverware. And, you know, we all expect it's going to be between Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers. But look, there's going to be pressure on Rovers tomorrow. If they don't win, people are going to say, here we go again, like another season where Rovers aren't going to be able to.
Particularly, I think, given, and Rovers are very quick to underline, that was last season.
Yeah.
But after 2 months of the season, they looked like they were a winning ticket. But
some people had given them the league title.
Johnny Ward had already etched the name onto the trophy.
Yeah. Rovers started really well last season, but so did Bows. And if you look at Bows's their start of the season in terms of defensively, they were really strong. They only conceded a handful amount of goals from open play in the first 8 or 9 games. So if they keep up that kind of form at this time this year, it's going to be a tough game for Shamrock Rovers to beat them out, to kind of get over that line again.
Okay, don't forget, for loads more League of Ireland coverage as well, check out Enda on Team 33 on News Talk as well. Keep tuned to Off the Ball across the weekend for all your updates and commentary from the Premier League as well. And we'll speak to you next Friday for the Paddy Power Half Hour.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.